Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
Hey, Brian Keller. I'm Dan Fernandez.
And question to the readers, who is on Dan's shirt? We're trying to figure out if it's Ulysses S. Grant or Garfield or...
Scott Goo?
Could be
yes,
Scott Goo.
Yes, could be Scott Goo in his earlier presidential years.
That's true.
So let's get into it. A couple, you know, we got some product launches, some Azure stuff, kind of mix and match, some virtual reality, augmented reality stuff. Kind of a full show?
That's right. Yeah, you're just kind of tipping the whole hand here. So here we have the release of Windows Server App Fabric.
Yes.
And so this provides caching, what was formerly known as...
Velocity. So a lot of people are familiar with Velocity. This has now become a core component of App Fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of... App Fabric is this thing called hosted services, and
right.
what it basically allows you to do is it's the hosting of WCF and workflow,
right?
And Windows workflow services. So there's a lot of stuff. It did RTM today, and we're shooting the 20th. There is also Windows Azure App Fabric, which is technically a separate thing, and there's
okay.
different features. So you should know the differences. And the Windows Server App Fabric actually includes a link. As you can see, to the Azure App Fabric, so you can make sure to kind of see what's going on, because there may not be feature parity.
And the Azure App Fabric is not RTM'd yet? Is that right?
No, it is live.
Oh, it's live. Okay.
So, yeah, so...
okay, but different features. Got it. Another thing that a lot of people have been waiting for is the Silverlight 4 RTM tooling support for Visual Studio 2010. RTM. So this came out Monday of this week, as well as WCF RIA Services RTM. And so Scott Goo has a nice blog post that talks about both of these.
We always talk about Scott Goo's post because he does the, let me show you the quick feature tour. He walks
mm-hmm.
through, you know, building a contact class and then being able to do the classic data binding in the tools base where you have the data sources. You drag and drop them onto there. So a lot of the things that Windows Forms developers are familiar with, or even VB6 developers, or 5 or 4, are familiar with that sort of data binding
mm-hmm.
and that visual way to see forms.
You can developers, Access developers.
So he walks through this and some other really nice things that I like IntelliSense when you're editing a style. So if I define a style, I can actually still get IntelliSense if I define it, say, a resource dictionary
mm-hmm.
or an app.xaml file. So cool stuff. Definitely
right.
check it out.
Yeah, definitely. So here's a post that Sam Gentile's been doing in a series of kind of roll-up blog posts, and this one is a look at C# 4 and base class library for .NET Framework 4.
Now, they got big integer in C# or in the BCL. What do you think about that?
They do. That's huge. Well, you know, J# had it, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it only took
congratulations
us.
Congratulations on catching up. Yeah.
It only took us 5 years
yeah.
to add a big integer.
I can finally port that pinball game that I wrote in J# over to C#.
The physics calculations for the.
yeah.
that's awesome. And some other, you know, not just BCL features and new data types, but also. Language features like C#, where especially for office interrupt, things mm-hmm. like
optional parameters that's
and
huge.
Name parameters,
yeah.
where I can say, you know, if I'm passing in the name, address, and street, I can say street equals and actually do named parameters as well. So
mm-hmm.
he goes through these are short and sweet.
Right. Nice little syntax sugar.
Yes.
Cool.
Check them out.
So here's a great article from the Visual Studio blog.
Michael Leonard from what used to be the Popfly team.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this tells you how to make a Visual Studio template, or what do they call them? Project templates.
Yeah.
The V6 files and really make it rock. And so he goes into some of the things that you can do to take your project templates to the next level, whether that's launching a wizard once you start into it.
Having a nice icon,
mm-hmm.
having a link to your documentation. All those sort of fit and finish things is what I describe it as.
Exactly, yeah. So, great article. That team does really nice blogging.
Yeah.
And actually, I have funny side story. I was over in Building 41 today in the conference room, and I know that it was actually the same conference room that these guys use for their weekly meeting. They have a poster up on the wall, and they have everyone on the team's name, and they have a rating that shows how well they're doing in terms of community interaction and blog posting and
Who's winning?
Well, Wes Hutchins has the most blog entries that I saw.
Nice!
And every time they do it, it's like kindergarten. Every time they do it, they give them a nice little, like, smiley face sticker.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, you know, just all these like pictures of cats and all sorts of things. So I think it's a funny way to motivate.
We should take a picture of that.
Yeah, we definitely should. We should post that up.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. now, switching gears a little, talking about Rx. So Bart DeSmet is talking about something called Rx.
Right.
So people get a little like, what actually is Rx? And I think one of the challenges is these guys are really smart when they're explaining it, and sometimes you kind of need the 10,000-foot view. So the way to think about Rx is the way the .NET framework works is you have these things called events. Somebody presses a button, there's a button fire event, right? Sometimes you don't want to listen to all events. You want to be able to filter them and do, I'd say, call it query and set operations, which are called link operations over them. So I don't want to listen to every button event. I only want to listen to button events every 10 seconds. Or I only want to listen to the fifth button event. Or I only want to listen to a button fire event, you know, with a specific condition. You can actually write code. So the idea is Rx enables you to write filter operations on top of events. Give you one example that we were doing this with our Clint and I built the Coding for Fun Canon. We looked at Rx. One of the things we would have used it for is when we're doing sending commands to drive that cannon, it's driving a robot, and it can send, the accelerometer could send, I think it's like 60 commands a second. That's a ton of commands and you really don't need that fast. You can do 100 milliseconds for a command or 200 milliseconds for a command, and it'll still feel responsive. So we did a simple filter that says, instead of listening to every single command, those 60 commands a second, let's just listen to every sixth one, so that's like 10 commands a second, so every 100 milliseconds.
Wow.
The idea is we could have used Rx for that and said, here's what I want you to do. Listen to those accelerometer, but only listen to every 10, and it builds a nice framework for you to define those sort of rules.
Ah, I like it. So this has been explained to me like 3 or 4 times, once by Bart himself, and that was the best description I heard. I don't know if it's right, I don't know if it's accurate, but I like it. I'm going to stick with it.
Okay, and the other thing that Bart goes through is, in this specific example, there's a class called iQueryable, and all this is using observable collections, which is just a fancy type that'll raise an event when something changes.
Okay.
So observable collections are used for, like, let's say I have a database. Or I used it for Intertube. Let's say I have a database or I have some data. If that data changes, I want my UI to change, right? So rather than me having to write code to basically listen, I instead am going to get an event that tells me, update your UI because that eBay auction just sold, or update that UI because that specific action happened. Your file is now downloaded or whatever. That's what an observable collection is. And this goes through some of the details on how they're using observable collections.
Gotcha. I also love Bart's shirt. I don't know if you can see that. It says, "What the Funk?" He made that himself. I think it's on Cafe Press or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. So the Silverlight 4, OData, and Rx.
Yeah, so now Code Project.
Bringing it all together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is a Silverlight MVP, and this is really like, let's use every single new technology Microsoft has. But
it only works on a Surface. Yeah, running Windows Phone 7. Yeah.
Totally. And Courier, it does work on Courier.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay, so Silverlight 4. What it's doing is asynchronously getting data from an OData feed and filtering out the events of the asynchronous when the data arrives. So it's a combination of OData, Rx, and Silverlight all working together. Check it out if you're looking for sort of advanced samples. And it isn't that complex of an example of using Rx extensions.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. So Windows Home Server Veil. So
yeah, when are we going to get you on a home server? What do I got to do to... I feel like a car dealer. What do we got to do?
Yeah, I should. I mean, the main reason I should is the backup capacity. I have one server that runs all the time at home. That's my Media Center. And of course, you can't do Media Center capabilities on a Windows home server unless you run...
Yes, you can.
You can run the Windows home server in a VM, right? Because I thought you couldn't do the two together. Can you? Has it changed? Because it used to be that Windows home server did not support Media Center. Has that changed?
To stream to a TV?
Yeah, to like record, like put a cable card in and all that jazz. Yeah.
Larry, what do you say?
I say yes.
Okay. It does?
All right.
I say it does.
Okay.
Larry says it does. We'll have to check.
Okay.
But I think we might be able to put you in a nice We'll have to talk about the rust proofing and a couple options.
So what is this? This is a video that takes me through the extension points for
No, this video walks through it's the overview of Veil, the new version of Windows Home Server. All the new cool stuff, including media integration and some of the scenarios in terms of media, Xbox, etc.
So this is Windows Home Server Veil unveiled. Is
that what you said?
I'm on vacation in like 20 minutes, so it's one of those days.
But why developers are going to care is, one, they've redone their console, made it, I think it's a Silverlight out of browser application, if I remember correctly. What's that?
Called Launcher.
Launcher. Yeah, okay. they did change the way it was called. It used to be called the Admin Console, or that's what it's called in the current version. But the real cool part is, and Larry's looking for questions that developers will have to ask. He's doing a follow-up interview on the new SDK. The new SDK includes a bunch of extensions, and they have some screenshots here. So you can actually, when you're adding a user account, your application can actually hook into that user account and, for example, register, like, hey, since you now did this, you know, I have the family list of Twitter accounts or the family Facebook accounts. Put this in here so we can have a family stream of Facebook accounts show up on say, the Xbox or whatever the example is. You can build all these custom applications or, you know, the family devices that I'm adding. You can now hook into, as a software developer or an ISV, directly into that account building process. I mean, the other part is just all the different things here. They have the new... And rather than this being a new extension of one you built, this is actually one of their existing ones, which is the computers and backup, that you can now add different columns here. So I can say maybe check online storage, maybe some online backup, add different tasks here, all sorts of different things. So if I'm, say, X Drive and I want to add some cool thing for Azure storage backup or something, I could, you know, add that in there and add it as an extension.
Or if in order to back up my application, I knew that I had to actually stop the application for 10 minutes while all that data got backed up, so you could probably subscribe so that every night at 2 a.m. when it goes to back up everything, it pauses your application, backs it up. I mean, that seems like the type of thing you should be able to enable, right?
You don't have to pause your applications to back up. It backs up live, baby.
Really? Even if you've got a lock on
it. It's
a file.
The craziest thing. Wow. I don't know what magic they do, but you don't have to pause anything.
Nice.
That's why I love it. And it's all incremental, too.
Hmm.
It's ridiculous. So, moral of the story is cool features coming in Veil.
Mm-hmm.
Send your SDK questions on the post that Larry mentioned. And there's a lot of cool stuff. Check out the white paper in terms of what the new extensions are for developers.
All right. Cool. So this is Windows Azure guidance from the Patterns and Practices team. And so this is the first in a series of guidance kits or whatever that you want to call it that's coming out that goes into everything from you know, how do you make the economics work well for you in a Windows Azure cloud-based model, to what else? Technical guidance?
Just an overview of what Azure is, right? So, and this is by the Patterns and Practices team, and this is an RC, and you know some of the guys that do Patterns and Practices. I mean...
Joy Krishnamurthy.
Yeah.
My co-author.
Shout out for what book, Brian? I don't know what you're talking
That'll
about.
Be Professional Application Lifecycle Management with Visual Studio 2010. Yeah, I know, it's a long title.
Yeah, exactly.
tinyurl.com/.
They're taking some of the guidance and best practices for building applications, and they show you how to implement an app, and there's even some code samples and stuff. So and things like monitoring your application as well. So lots of good stuff, and really the Azure team has been blowing up. Like they got some new How Do I videos on using some of the CDN stuff. We're not going to get into that, but and some of the other things on diagnostics where you can actually write your diagnostic information as it's happening to table storage.
So
a lot of cool stuff on the Azure front.
So RavenDB semi-structured database.
Semi-structured, semi-sweet structured database.
For this is built on .NET.
Yeah, right. It's Ayende Rahin, which a lot of people know from nHibernate. Actually, he's done a number of different projects, Rhino Mox and a bunch of others. But this is a database that's designed for semi-structured data. And if you look at the data example, it actually looks very similar to the Channel 9 data model, where you have posts, you have comments, you have tags. These things can change. They can be one-to-many's. And he walks through some of the, this is the core scenario, is semi-structured data where you don't have a schema or that schema is flexible. You define these things, like SQL, instead of using SQL statements, you define link statements. That is, here's what I want to get my data back, you know, from, you know, where blog post equals this, get all comments, for example.
Okay.
It keeps that as what they call an index, and it basically, you can think of an index as the equivalent of a view in a database, right? So the data structure may be totally different. The link statement is how you want that to get back, and then it optimizes for that link statement. Mm. So there's a lot of sort of interesting things that they're doing, and really, I think some of his experience in building nHibernate and some of the things that they were doing in the ORM really helped guide and influence some of the RavenDB decisions.
Now, does the link
statement... And it says MapReduce and all the other stuff for scalability and so forth.
Okay, so does the link statement then, does that live at your data tier, or does that live in your app?
It lives in your app.
Okay, so it's not like procedural code or T-SQL code that you're putting in there?
No, it's okay. Your code that's basically doing the ORM part, which is, you know, take this and then convert it into whatever thing that I need to. But the point is, it's really nice API, client API, mm-hmm. that I'm using in my app, and then it's doing all its magic underneath the covers.
Okay, gotcha. Finding memory leaks in WPF-based applications. So this is cool. I like it for its simplicity. It's just a really simple WPF application, and it has a couple of examples of ways in which memory leaks may creep into your application. Like you gave some examples of using a static image within your class.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get garbage collected.
Yeah, or things like, you know, you have a sub window that you don't delete, and it still keeps a handle, and it's not GC'd. The cool part is it's a sample, right? So you can actually, one, it shows you, like, hey, how to check the memory profiler. Two, it actually shows you how to work around it. And so it's like, here's the problem, here's the sample that you can run to see the problem actually happening, and then here's how to solve it.
Hmm.
So there's 10 of these, and definitely if you're a WPF developer, know these and realize you may be getting yourself in trouble.
Well, even if you're not a WPF developer, it seems like some of these examples may apply to other frameworks as well, right?
Really? Your mom is going to worry about...
My mom forgets stuff all the time. She definitely has memory leak problems. Maybe this
one. Oh, yeah. Snap! Yeah. Lucky she's not going to remember the... Whoa! Picks of the week. So, Ohan, Oda, who's... I hope I got his name right, is a PhD student at Columbia. And he wrote a framework that allows you to build augmented reality applications.
So we've talked about augmented reality before. The idea
yes.
is that you basically have like a video camera into the real world, right? So we're looking at this desk, and then you've got on a computer screen or within a set of glasses, you've got other stuff that you put on top of that. So we figure out that this desk has a particular orientation, and then we put a computer graphic generated image of Larry dancing on the table or something like that.
Exactly.
So, and if we could get that added in post, that would be great.
Yeah, and he's going to spend all weekend on this. So he goes through, and for those of you who attended PDC 2008, and I think Laura actually did a video that had his app kind of running, because you kind of need to see it to believe it. But it is a board that gives specific dimensions so you know like what the orientation of different things are and the spacing. This goes through all the physics and how to use the Goblin XNA application to build your own augmented reality. But it is insane when you actually see it.
And so
see it happen.
The idea is that you have a board in real life and you can like move it around and all these pieces can bounce around.
That was the example that was actually used at PDC where there was an accelerometer and you had a ball that you're taking through almost like that old mousetrap game.
Oh, yeah.
Rube Goldberg kind of style thing. Like you have, there's a, like a little ramp, and you got to push the ramp over, and you're like almost exaggerating, and you're like moving.
Hmm.
There's objects being kicked away, and because they're all physics, they feel like they're flying away and almost flying off the board. I mean, you can see this sort of still image of these dominoes and these different pieces falling. But it is, to me, it's one of the biggest wow experiences.
Yeah.
And it's awesome that it's all on .NET.
And just wait till you combine this experience with Natal.
Way to ruin V2.
So my pick of the week, this is something that came out this week. It's a jump list extender. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that, you know, there's all these applications that do make good use of jump lists, like Internet Explorer and Messenger starting to write Outlook. But there's a bunch of especially legacy applications which don't make use of of jump lists, but this allows you to go back to those applications and basically add jump list shortcuts to those applications.
Here's the three things I do with WinZip or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought this was pretty cool and a nice way to make your apps even more friendly to Windows 7.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's our show, and thank you, sir. And we will see you enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
And we will see you next week.